You are listening to Living for the Cinema with Jeff Gershon. I am a cinema enthusiast of all genres, here to discuss with you one film every episode. The good, the bad, and the ugly of what makes each film unique. Spoiler alert. No matter when this film was released, there's a good possibility I will be revealing spoilers about the plot or even possibly the ending, so just be warned. Man on Fire, which came out in 2004 and was directed by Tony Scott. It stars Denzel Washington, Dakota Fanning, Roger Mitchell, Mark Anthony, Giancarlo Giannini, Mickey Rourke, Rachel Ticketon, Robert Sosa, Jesus Ochoa, and Christopher Walken. The genre would be revenge thriller.
There were 24 kidnappings in Mexico City in the last 6 days. Have you protected a lot of children before, Mr. Creasy?
I don't know. Bodyguards gotta be close to people. You know, I'm no good at that.
Be the silent type. People are gonna appreciate that.
16 years of military experience, extensive counterterrorism work.
What happened to your hand?
It's a birth defect.
PETA just wants to be friends.
I regret that your profession needs to exist.
So do I, Marjorie.
He's like a bear.
Yeah?
Big sad bear. Good things happen too, Creasy.
Yeah? Like what?
Like meeting me.
I remember first seeing this in theaters when it was released 20 years ago and being somewhat underwhelmed. And since I'm a diehard Denzelite and I keep hearing it praised from other diehard Denzelites as likely the best Denzel-Tony Scott collaboration on literally every podcast and or movie discussion show that I listen to, well, it felt like the right time to revisit it. And I can say that it's pretty damn good, albeit a bit drawn out. Now, most Tony Scott films top out at just around the two-hour mark, whereas this one approaches 2.5 hours. And you do feel it at points. Which is not to say that the early character stuff with Denzel and Dakota as Creasy and PETA for the first hour is not effective. Because it is. It's very effective.
10.99.
Yes! Whoa! I'm tough, Creasy.
Yeah? No such thing as tough. There's train, and then there's untrained. And now which are you?
Train.
Train. Okay, let's go again. Okay, hey.
I'm a prisoner in the blocks until the gunshot sets me free.
That's right. Don't smile. Don't fool around if you want to win. You want to win?
Yes.
Trained or untrained?
Trained.
Go.
There's a lot of strong emotion there, driven by very strong acting. And along those lines, Scott, with a very strong assist from DP Paul Cameron and editor Christian Wagner, he truly does just direct the shit out of this material with a camera that never stops moving and an almost relentless desire to keep inserting shots, whip pans, changing the film stock, etc. Even the subtitles throughout are presented with a certain unique style. For the most part, it genuinely works and rarely distracts. Now, it's just unfortunate that the third act does drag a bit. I don't know, maybe a few too many minutes of lingering shots of bodies in pools, including all those shots of Denzel's Creasy washing his wounds underwater. I mean, yes, I get the symbolism. I do. It's also nice seeing Giancarlo Giannini seemingly reprising his role from the movie Hannibal just a few years prior. Well, kind of, sort of, if you...
I want this man as much as Creasy does.
He'll deliver more justice in a weekend than 10 years of your courts and tribunals. Just stay out of his way.
I plan to. I will even help him if I can. But I'd like to understand him.
But I'm not sure what real purpose his character serves other than serving as an audience for a fantastic Christopher Walken monologue, which I'll get to in just a bit. Now, about that late story twist regarding the character of PETA. You know the one if you've seen this. Well, I have mixed feelings on it. As while it does lead to an effective emotional payoff at the end, it just kind of feels shoehorned in. I mean, she is presented to us as one of the main characters early on. And then you just kind of keep her character off screen for roughly 80 minutes?
Okay, you go home.
Okay. Where are you going?
I'm going home too. I'm going to Blue Bayou.
Oh, hey.
I got something for you. I got the last number too.
I love you, Gracie. You love me, don't you?
Yes, I do. With all my heart, Peter, go. Go, run.
Also, just how seriously traumatized will this little girl be after being held captive for several months and coming back to her favorite person, her best friend, murdered while her father has committed suicide? Yeah, just kind of a rougher, unfinished note to end the movie on, as are those closing titles on screen for Creasy's character. Just kind of strange. Some strange choices towards the end.
En la iglesia dicen que hay que perdonar.
Forgiveness is between them and God. It's my job to arrange the meeting.
This brings us to the categories. The first category would be the best needle drop. This is the best song cue or piece of score used throughout the runtime of the film, because music is essential to film. Harry Gregson-Williams composed the score for this film, and if that name sounds familiar, well, it should, because he also recently composed the scores for each of Denzel's recent Equalizer trilogy. And the orchestral music that he produces for this movie is sufficiently propulsive and emotional throughout. But for me, the musical highlight occurs around the 50-minute mark of the movie, when the revenge plot really kicks in. And this contribution comes from none other than one of the best alt-rock bands of the 90s, whose frontman Trent Reznor would eventually go off to be one of the best composers of the 21st century for film. I'm referring to Cleveland's own Nine Inch Nails. And it's an instrumental track from their 1999 album, The Fragile, no less. The scene occurs with Creasy in PETA's bedroom holding her stuffed animal, commiserating with PETA's mother, played affectingly by Roger Mitchell. His sadness then shifts into cold ferocity as he makes a declaration, just as an angry guitar riff starts to kick in.
My own baby. She needed me so much. Sometimes I felt like I had nothing to give her. Just, I don't know what to do. What are you gonna do?
What I do best. I'm gonna kill him. Anyone that was involved, anybody who profited from it, anybody who opens their eyes at me.
I think it's Reznor performing this riff as well. And then, as Lisa walks away with Creasy staring downward, the drum bassline kicks in and we are suddenly in a short but very satisfying gearing up montage. You know what I'm talking about, the key scene where the hero gathers up his weapons and tries them on and samples them. We've seen this in dozens of movies, going back to Commando and Rambo. As we see Creasy here gathering up a sizable arsenal of weapons from an arms dealer in the city. Sampling a variety of weapons as Walken's Rayburn looks on in awe. And blink, and you'll even miss a quick shot of a clear, empty suppository, which ends up playing a major part later on in the movie. The camera panning around Denzel as he extends a shotgun with one arm. And this music just keeps getting louder and more aggressive. It's tropey, but damn it if it doesn't work. This fist-pumping track, which we hear playing over this scene, is called The Mark Has Been Made.
Running.
Ah. The next category would be wasted talent. This is the most underutilized talent involved with the film. Now back to that ending. Now knowing what it could have been, I feel as if Scott and crew bungled it just a bit. And here's why. As tropey as it has become, keep going back to tropes here, but this movie does tropes well, I gotta say. I'm a sucker for those moments in cinema when a protagonist knows their goose is cooked. They're about to leave this world. So they take the opportunity to go out in a blaze of glory and take out either the major bad guy or several bad guys with them. More often than not, this is done via explosive, which they have on them. Just for a couple of prime examples, I'm referring to Vasquez clutching that grenade with Gorman during the climax of Aliens, just as several of them are closing in on her in that air duct. Or, even better example, spoiler alert, the very satisfying conclusion to Leon the Professional. Yeah.
This is from... Matilda. Shit.
And I'll get to that movie later this year. Well, Man of Fire did have one such ending, which apparently was left on the cutting room floor. And you can even see it on YouTube, which I'll leave a link to in the notes, where Creasy is now slowly dying from his gunshot and is actually taken to the home of the guy at the very top of this organization, The Voice, which has orchestrated PETA's kidnapping. As far as I can recall, also, this is the only time in this movie when we will actually meet this character. He's nicknamed The Voice, but he's actually Aurelio Sanchez, played nicely by Jero Camilo.
When we went anywhere, with any children, we had to run. Because if we didn't, we were fucked with. Now I never run. When I walk, my dogs, I stroll. No one fucks with me. They respect me. You know why? Because my word is good.
And as we watch Creasy bleeding out on his chair and also clutching a charm which PETA gave him, we see Aurelio monologue just a bit. And then Creasy asks him a question about the time. And the camera closes in on Creasy's watch, which counts down to zero. Brief freeze frame of Denzel smiling, and then, boom!
You ever see the hand of God in what you do?
No. Do you?
I hope so.
Now, I would not say that it's the best ending, but it's still a more satisfying one than the one we're given. It just provides more closure to his character and to the story overall. I believe it might have been taken out for length reasons, but sorry, just a missed opportunity there. For me, it would have been worth the extra 5 minutes. And now the next category, which is the trailer moment. This is the scene or moment that best describes this movie. Wow. This is a tough one, as this movie has so many memorable moments. In fact, you can make a case that it holds up better as a series of strong sequences than a propulsive, cohesive story. I'll narrow it down, though, to three distinct scenes, each very different, but all expertly based on character. Number one. As you most definitely need to include one scene with Dakota's PETA, my personal favorite would be about 40 minutes into the movie. Just a genuinely sweet, funny, throwaway moment. Creasy is helping PETA with her homework. And then as he cracks a smile, she comically points it out. And what results is a lovely exchange.
Why, you feel sorry for the husband?
Yeah, can you imagine my mom multiplied by 1,000? Creasy, you're smiling.
What?
You were smiling.
No, I'm not.
You were?
No, I was not.
You're not now, but you were.
No, you were smiling. I wasn't smiling.
You were.
When?
Like 5 seconds ago.
I'm not smiling.
Well, a second ago you were.
No, you said 5 seconds ago. Now that's six. 6 seconds ago I wasn't smiling.
Okay,
ten seconds ago. 10 seconds ago I was smiling. Okay, in the next 10 seconds, let's see who smiles first. You smiled already. See, you did. No, that wasn't a, that was a smirk. That was a smirk. That's not a smile. A smirk is different. They both start with S, but they're not the same.
You were.
Number two. Yeah, in case you didn't notice, this movie does rely heavily on a lot of tropes to tell its story. But hey, it's all about the execution, and this one's a doozy. I'm talking about the time-tested trope of the, quote, the hero qualifier. Yep, that critical scene in any action movie when you have a former partner or friend of the hero dishing to someone else as to how the hero is the best at what he does, and to watch out.
My guy in DC tells me that we are not dealing with a student here, we're dealing with a professor. Anytime the military has an operation that can't fail, they call this guy in to train the troops, okay? He's the kind of guy that would drink a gallon of gasoline so he could piss in your campfire. You could drop this guy off at the Arctic Circle wearing a pair of bikini underwear without his toothbrush, and tomorrow afternoon he's going to show up at your poolside with a $1 million smile and a fistful of pesos. This guy's a professional, you got me?
And this might have started with Colonel Troutman in First Blood all those decades ago. Well, here, it's Christopher Walken playing Rayburn, who is Creasy's old CIA partner. He's being questioned about halfway through the movie by Giannini's Inspector Manzano about what to expect from Creasy.
I would have been helping if I can. But, I'd like to understand him. Give me that.
Peter Ramos. A number to you, you know, one more dead, but a number.
What was she to Crazy then?
She showed him it was all right to live again.
And let's just say, to put it succinctly, Walken really does Walken it up. Great stuff.
A man can be an artist. And anything, fool, whatever. It depends on how good he is at it. Creasy's art is dead. He's about to paint his masterpiece.
Now, number three. I feel kind of hackneyed choosing this one, as it seems to be the one oft-quoted line that all super fans of this movie always go back to. But hey, it's often quoted for a reason. Two-thirds of the way through the movie, Creasy has got the drop on a crooked Mexico City cop who was involved with the kidnapping. They're under the bridge where it all went down. The dude is dressed down to his underwear and strapped to a car. And something mysterious has apparently been stuffed up his rear. Nothing graphically shown, but, well, you get the idea.
Let me show you what I got here. See this? This is a charger used by convicts to hide money and drugs. They stick it in their body. They tuck it up their rectum. You familiar with that? This, look at me. Pencil detonator. Timer. Used as a receiver, transmitter. C4. Highly explosive. You put them all together, you got a bomb. Not very sophisticated, but very powerful. That's what you have in your ass right now. Don't move.
Now, the trailer line is, of course, a fantastic one, a truly badass quip, and possibly the best one ever uttered by Denzel. But what I really like about this scene is Denzel's comically relaxed lead-up to that line. Regardless, I do wish that we had more time.
What are you going to do now?
What am I
going
to do? I'm going to leave. I got to go.
Really?
Yeah.
Come on. Yeah, what about me?
What about you? We've got 40 seconds.
Come on.
45.
Last wish, please.
Last wish. I wish you had more time.
Hey.
And now the final category, the MVP, the person or people who are most responsible for the success of this film. Overall, this might even be one of Denzel's best performances, with loads of nuance and a full-on emotional arc, often even played silently. Now granted, the whole aging warrior bonding with child, or more well-known as the lone wolf and cub trope, has been done to death, but he still brings a fresh spin to it, helped in no small part by the often fractured way in which the late great Tony Scott presents it all to us, and of course his fantastic chemistry with Dakota Fanning. His Creasy goes through the full range of emotions and is convincingly all relatable. Indignation, resigned grief, gallows humor, and even some empathy, which all comes to a head in an emotional confrontation scene late in the film with his character and PETA's parents, including Mark Anthony, who's really holding his own no less as her father Samuel.
You know, they say a bullet always tells the truth. never lies. It didn't work for me, Samuel. Maybe. Maybe it'll work for you.
Bottom line is that this movie simply falls apart and potentially even gets bogged down in all the cliches without Mr. Washington's acting chops. For truly elevating this material into something much more impactful than your typical cop revenge thriller with, say, a Bronson or Eastwood as the lead, Denzel Washington is the MVP.
I like the research and the preparation, you know, and finding that character. And you don't always find it, especially not in the first few days necessarily. You're still working it out. But it's an interesting journey. And to be able to visit these different worlds, to suddenly, you know, some of the experts that you found that I worked with, and, you know, tapping their brain. And I mean, days like there was a woman whose daughter had been kidnapped, and she came in and talked to us, and she told the story with her daughter there. I mean, these real stories and real people and real, obviously real emotions, and it's a unique profession.
My rating for Man on Fire would be 4 stars out of 5. Overall, this is still pretty much prime Denzel and Tony, even though I don't think it's their best collaboration. Now, that would still be previous episode Crimson Tide, but still a pretty impressive movie overall. Happy 20th anniversary to one of the better revenge thrillers of the 21st century. And if you're looking to watch Man on Fire, it is currently streaming on Max. And that ends another Lone Wolf and Cub review. Please like, subscribe, and share the Living for the Cinema podcast, and follow and like us on Facebook, Instagram, and Letterboxd. And join us next time for another review from Living for the Cinema. May